Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things KISS. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, I'm Paul Stevenson, and this is episode 117 of VRP Rocks, the ultimate classic rock podcast that says that my music is better than yours. Make sure to subscribe to VRP Rocks on your podcast app right now so you don't miss a single episode. They come out every Monday and always feature big-name rock stars that found fame in the 60s, 70s, or 80s. Now, today's guest is a man with an incredible voice, an incredible guitarist, and a brilliant songwriter, and a member of one of Canada's greatest rock groups. I'm talking about Rick Emmett from Triumph. The band were awarded 19 platinum or gold records in Canada and the US alone. They were inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame and were nominated for multiple Juno Awards as well. Now, Rick is a great guy and tells some fantastic stories I can't wait to play you. But, as you can probably hear, my throat is very sore this week, so I'm not going to lavish you with a big intro as usual, but I will, of course, ask once more for you to give VRP Rocks Radio a try. 1,000 songs are on the system now, a lot of great feedback so far, so thank you to everyone who has given it a listen. The link is in the description to this very episode, so please give it a go. You can just click on the link or copy the link and put it into a webpage, and you'll be able to listen. 458 different listeners in March so far, which is great for a new start online radio station, I think, with no big corporation behind them. It is just me. Now, if you're not aware of what VRP Rocks Radio is, it's an online radio station I've created, playing deep cuts that get ignored from classic artists, as well as songs from bands lost to time on the usual classic rock radio stations. Give it a listen, you certainly won't be disappointed. Right, back to Rick Emmett then. He's got a new album out, so we're going to speak about that for a couple of minutes. And then I'm going to ask him your questions. There's some cool questions that were sent in from listeners, VRP Rocks YouTube viewers, and from people on the social media pages too. It's a fun chat, and we talk about loads of different things. Everything from his famous white V guitar to, well, his accidents on stage, to the famous Us Festival that Triumph played, and so much more. So here you go. Please enjoy this week's chat with Rick Emmett. Well, Rick, it's an absolute pleasure to chat with you, and I'm looking forward to hearing your stories and to find out more about this exciting new release of yours as well, Diamonds, the Best of Hard Rock, 1990 to 1995. I think it's out now, and it's a brand new compilation of tracks that you've handpicked as well, isn't it, from your previous records. And there's some interesting new songs on there as well, previously unheard songs, so lots to get into. So let's start with, where did the idea come about, and was it fun trying to select the songs from your previous records?
It was, and I got the masters back. That's where it started, you know. And now, having said that, there's this guy named Greg Campbell. He's a merch guy, runs a company called Merch in Motion. And then he decided, hey, I think I want to start getting into the whole dive vinyl stuff and reissuing things. And so he started Music in Motion. And so he pitched a guy that works for me, Rick Wharton, and they talked about it. And Rick Wharton, the Spud Man, he had been a local promotion guy, marketing guy at Universal, who was the distributor of Duke Street. So when these albums originally came out in 1990, 93, 95, the three albums on Duke Street, he worked them. And so he was going, yay, well, let's get those back. Like, maybe we can get the rights. So I, you know, phoned the guy that was the, and they'd kind of gone out of business. And he said, yeah, just send me a 2-page agreement and I'll give you the rights of the masters back. So that's how it started. And then Campbell, my feeling was he would have more success if he leaned on the harder rock stuff, just because of the connections that he had in business wise. But he had a pretty strong idea of which tracks he wanted. And then we bounced it back and forth. And so that's how the running order kind of got put together. And he would be going, well, I think I want Window Heartbreaks on there. I'm going, that's a ballad, you know, I already give you a ballad. He goes, oh no, I want that. Okay. So it was a very melodic rock kind of thing, but also there was a prog thing from, you know, Stand and Delivers on there. And then just me being self-indulgent, you know, the fun of it was putting them back together and then getting to hear like the musicians that I'd hired, that like the drummer, Randy Cook, that plays on Drive Time and Stand and Deliver. I mean, he plays on almost all those. Like, he's such a good drummer, you know, and he actually just played on this brand new Billy Joel single. Like Randy gets around. He plays on he tours with a lot of, he's out with Britt Floyd right now. So he's playing a bunch of Nick Mason stuff. But, you know, that was a joy for me. So does that answer the question? I think it does.
It certainly does indeed, yes. And it's not just a case of picking up the tracks and putting them into a new compilation, because you've actually remastered them as well, haven't you? You've given them a new listening experience. So tell me about that process.
Well, it wasn't me. As a guy named Vic Branco, he's kind of like a partner with Greg Campbell in this, you know, record label thing that they've got going. And I think Vic's thing was, I'll remaster these and you know, make them fresh. Now, he's an Atmos guy now, but we didn't have enough tracks to be able to do that. But he freshened them up. You know, I think I would like to also say that I think we did a pretty good job of mixing and mastering initially way back in the day. And the disappointment for me was that, like, for example, Absolutely was the first one of the three albums. When we made a deal with Charisma Records in the States, they went bankrupt about a month after they'd serviced the first two songs to FM radio. So that album never really got a fair shot. And then the last couple, Ipso and Spiral, for sure, like the industry was going, eh, we're not interested. So that's been a really cool thing for me, is that getting to hear the stuff again, and I go, well, we didn't actually do too bad a job. These are good sounding recordings and good sounding mixes. It really only required Vic to, you know, freshen them up a little bit and make them so that, you know, when they recut the lacquers, you can get a lot more level nowadays than you could back in the day. I mean, yes, there's an analog process to making vinyl records, but digital it plays its way in everywhere now. There's computers, you know, overseeing the fact that you can get a lot more level onto things than you used to be able to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what makes this collection so special. You mentioned there the changing times. I speak to a lot of people in the 90s was a changing time for music, and a lot of people's music kind of went under the radar that shouldn't have done. So it is nice for you to be able to bring these songs back to the public and maybe to fans of yours that never really delved into that at the time. So yeah, come go back and listen to these.
Yeah. That is the hope. Anyways, it's like, now I'm doing the round of promo. We'll have to see whether or not they actually sell through. But, you know, if it does, then it'll be like, oh, you know, hey, maybe there's more to be done of the mining of the past, because there's three albums. We only made one. So there could be another one of softer material, you know. Plus, I should tell you, I keep working here in my studio, and I've just done a project called 10 Telecaster Tales, sort of focused on the electric Telecaster guitar and what it can do. And it's just finger style kinds of stuff. But I've written a book about the creative process. So ECW Press, who did my memoir back in October, they're going to put up this thing. So I like the idea of music being able to marry to written kinds of projects. This you know, Diamonds thing was supposed to come out at the same time that my memoir did last October, and it didn't quite make it. You know, it's taken them a little while to get it to market. But yeah, there is this thing of sort of the written world and the music world being able to integrate, you know, here in my senior years.
Fascinating stuff. And it's great to hear that you're keeping so busy as well, which is brilliant. Just in terms of the record itself, then, there are signed deluxe editions. There's only a limited number of these that are available. They come with signed versions and marble-spaced vinyl effects and handwritten lyric sheets, and there's unseen photo sets and guitar picks and so many other things as well, isn't there?
Indeed. I think you just covered them all. There's some handwritten lyrics. Did you get that?
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I mean, obviously, these vinyl reissue packages. And by the way, it's a gatefold where the album's in one side, but the CD goes into a thing too. So you're getting both the CD and the vinyl album at the same time, which is, that's kind of cool. I mean, I was always more of a CD guy than a vinyl album guy. And the reason is because vinyl, I was there in the day when you made records and then you had to go and do lacquering sessions, and they would go, well, I'm sorry, Rick, we can't put the heavy songs near the back end of the spiral because the bottom end will make the needle jump out of the grooves. And you're going, oh, really? So you're going to change the EQ of the record as it runs? And they go, yeah, I'm afraid so. But your classical pieces, we can put those near the end because they, you know, they won't make the needle jump out of the thing. I'm going, oh, so I can't put my I would like to put my classical piece at the front, but no, you're going to move. You're going to change the running order because of the. Okay, fine. You know, so I do find vinyl a bit of a pain in the butt. But anyhow, that's a tangent.
That is indeed dictated to by technology. It sounds like a modern day thing as well, doesn't it, when you say it like that? Anyway, this deluxe edition, it's available on rockpapermerch.com, and I definitely recommend you check them out. Some fantastic items there, hand-signed and all that sort of stuff. So please do check out Diamonds, the hard rock songs from 1990 to 1995 from Rick Emmett. Fantastic stuff. Now, Rick, as we've got you here, I put out some a request to my listeners, viewers, subscribers, that sort of thing, to get some questions for you. I know you answer an awful lot of questions from your own fans, so I thought I'd put some to you and maybe find some that you've not been asked before. I highly doubt that, but we'll see how we get on. Question is one that I no doubt you get asked constantly, all the time, and you probably know what's coming up.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Switch 625, Train Hunter's Family, Mike Gadero, and Montana Guy 51. They all want to know, what is the chance of a Triumph reunion to make the fans happy?
Well, Triumph was always a band that tried to make fans happy. And if you've seen the documentary, you saw a thing where the fans, the greatest fans from all over the world were brought in, and we did this kind of a fan fest for performance. And I think that might have been Gilmour's last hurrah. You know, he practiced and rehearsed, and For Gil, it's a tough go to play his way through a full set, sing half the songs, because that was part of the thing too. And you know, we're not getting any younger, and the arthritis, the things in your back that can start happening, for especially for drummers, in terms of singing, Gil wears hearing aids now all the time, so there's that. I think we did that thing for the documentary, and he seemed like, okay, you know, I'm done, like I'm finished. And I retired from the road, you know, right before COVID hit, because I'd had enough of airports and hotels and, you know, Ubers and, you know, whatever. Like, I'd had enough, you know. And it's not like any of us need the money. And I think one of the things that does drive some bands to keep doing it, I mean, some bands do it because they love it. And they're, you know, they can't imagine a life without it. But other guys, they're on their third marriage, and they've got all of this alimony that's piling up, you know. I mean, the Monty Python guys go out because Cleese has got all of this alimony. He's got me. So, you know, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, and I hate to disappoint those guys. But, you know, I think one of the things is we keep putting out these books and compilation things, and we do interviews with folks like you so that we can keep something alive, you know. It's not gone forever, but I don't think a live gig or a tour is on in the cards.
And what's the relationship like between the three of you? Is everything rosy still?
Yeah, good. Yeah. I mean, we try to get together every Christmas and have a dinner where we sit down together, just the three of us, and kind of tell stories and, you know, have a few drinks. And then, you know, there's constant things where I'm going to the Metalworks, seeing Gil, sitting down. Mike still, I think he sold his place in Jamaica, but I think he's got another one that he goes and he rents now. And he goes there for like 4 months of the winter all the time, you know, every year. So I don't see as much of him, but we get together. There's things where, you know, we have business that we have to attend to, and you know, I had those guys play on this would be something, I don't know if you, but I did a record for Mascot Pro Vogue, and that's 2016. And Gil and Mike played on a track on that called Grand Parade. So, I mean, if anybody's not aware of that, they should track that one down and give that a listen, because it was kind of fun. That was like going all the way back to the Suitcase Blues song from Just a Game album in 1979. So Grand Parade was the sort of 2016 version of, you know, a jazzy kind of a little, just a trio sitting around and having the song about reminiscing. And that was a special thing for me, that cut.
Oh, fantastic stuff. Lovely to hear. I've got a question here from Ronnie Parker, who says, does Rick still have his white V-shaped guitar from the Triumph years? It's my favorite Wicked guitar of his.
Okay, well, there wasn't just one. There were several, you know. And the original one, I sold it at one point in amongst of a collection of stuff to the Hard Rock Cafe. They bought about 10 or 12 of my guitars in one go. Okay. So, and I've had people, you know, they'll send me a text or something. They'll go, hey, Rick, I'm in the Hard Rock in Stockholm, and your guitar is just outside the men's washroom, you know. But they move them around. So sometimes I'll get one and somebody say, hey, Rick, I'm at the Hard Rock in Vegas, man. Your V is here. So that V, it makes the rounds of the Hard Rocks. The ones that got made that were reissues, I got a few of those. And the one that I kept, I gave one to some people that work for me. And the one that I kept and I had played live and used in Sweden with Triumph, my son has it on a wall in his house. I did a thing believe it or not, when we moved here, I downsized. This was only a chunk of my collection. And so I let my kids kind of go through another chunk. I put a bunch of guitars on and I said, pick any one you want, any two or three that you want, as long as you build a shrine for me in your house and you can pick a gold record or a platinum record to go with it. So the kids, you know, I call them my kids, but, you know, we're talking people that are between the ages of 35 to 42 now, you know, those folks, they have shrines, and the white V is in my son's house, and it's got the Allied Forces platinum record, and he's got the V, so...
Oh. Oh, perfect place to have it. Sounds fantastic. I've got a question here from Dizzy Busy 88. I love these names on YouTube, by the way. Dizzy Busy says, what was the pressure like to be expected to sing such difficult parts live almost perfectly every night?
Wow. Well, it's nice that they say almost perfectly. You know, I got to admit I had anxiety constantly because it was a high pressure thing for me to get out on that high wire naked and you know, no safety net and have to do that. They were high. Those parts were, I mean, we opened for Journey once and Steve Perry came to me and said, my God, are you singing like B's and D's and E's? Like, and I went, yeah. And he went, oh man, do you do that every night? I'm going, yeah. He's going, oh my God, that's insane, you know? And it was. Now, having said that, you know, Steve Perry had to sing every single song for Journey. I only had to sing half the songs. So when Gil would sing one, I could kind of be resting. I would run around the stage, but I could be resting my pipes a little bit and gearing up for the next one. And then there was always a good, you know, 10-minute drum solo in every. So the Triumph set was kind of designed so that I could always rest up and get ready for the next one, you know. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. The thing that's been lovely is that in my life, like there's a lot of play for example, the US Festival, you know, footage from 1983. I had a good day. And I had a good day because we'd only had to do a 1 hour show less, maybe a 50 minute show the night before in Florida, opening on a ZZ Top outdoor thing. We flew over to California, and then we only had to do like a 60-minute show there. And so it was like, hey, this won't be so hard, you know, and I can really give because I don't have to do a 90, and I, you know, I won't have to do all the songs. I don't have to do these ones. So, you know, we were artful in the way that we approached it, you know, and I was crafty.
Best way to be. You just mentioned Ozfest there. I've got to ask you about that as well. I mean, some incredible bands are on that day along with you. On was it Van Halen and Motley Crue and Priest, I think, and various others as well. I mean, what are your memories from that day?
Well, I certainly remember being on that bill and thinking, I don't think we belong on this bill.
Oh, no.
know, we were the outlier. But, well, I mean, part of it was Steve Wozniak's money. It was Apple's, you know, Macintosh's money, and we were one of his favorite bands. And so he wanted us on that bill. I think we proved that day that we were a pretty good band in our own way. You know, that we weren't like, you know, Scorpions and Priest and Motley Crue and, you know, and Van Halen. They were a lot heavier, harder hitting than we were. But we were kind of a band that was, like when Triumph first started, we were a Led Zeppelin copy band playing bars. And Led Zeppelin was a band that kind of, it had that sort of float like a butterfly, hammer like the gods, you know, style of, and we were a very Led Zeppelin-y kind of rock band. And I liked, you know, bands like Journey and Foreigner and Styx, and that there was a melodic kind of approach. So we were a bit of an outlier, but I enjoyed it. And I mean, I think the Scorpions played after us. And to me, they sounded really good. They were tight and they had a really good band sound. I didn't get to see a lot of the other bands. We kind of flew in a helicopter, played our gig, hang around a little bit, and then flew back out and we were gone. But I'm going to mention this just because, you know, you're English. We played Stoke-on-Trent once at a Heavy Metal Holocaust, and we were up the bill from the headliner that day was oh my god, Lemmy, Motorhead, and but the other band was Ozzy, and Ozzy had Randy Rhodes, Rudy Sarzo, Tommy Aldridge, and that was one of the best rock bands I ever saw. Ever in my life. And I've seen a lot of rock bands, but That day, they had a good day. I could take or leave Ozzy. It doesn't do anything for me. But Randy Rhoads on guitar, oh my God. And like Rudy Sarzo on bass with Tommy Aldridge, that was a rhythm section. They absolutely kicked ass. Like they were so good. So, you know, it wasn't the US Festival, but I thought I'd mention that one because that's where you were going.
Yeah, lovely question. Lovely answer. Lovely story. I've got another couple of questions here that are kind of linked. You mentioned earlier you got to run around on stage and stuff while Gil's doing his singing. I've got a couple of questions. One from R&B says, what happened when you fell off stage and broke your leg in Odessa, Texas, 19th November 1986? And I've got one here from Jack Luminous who says, do you remember the Sport of Kings tour at the Syracuse War Memorial? Yngwie opened for you. You fell and played the rest of your show on a wooden stool. Is that two different events where you... bit clumsy on stage, or is that the same thing?
No, I've always had a bad knee. I wrecked it playing high school football, and I never had an ACL. And then I had in my 40s, I had surgery to replace the ACL. But you know, it's arthritic. It's a lousy. It's always been lousy. But I was a real jock when I was a kid. I played a lot of sports. I played, you know, soccer. You guys call it football, but I played American football. For years in high school, I played baseball. I ran track. I was a fast runner, so I ended up playing a lot of sports. I played basketball in the winter. So you know, you do damage to yourself over the years. So sometimes jumping off a drum riser or miscalculating where the front of the stage was, there would be, you know, as Paul Simon would say, incidents and accidents. You know, what can I tell you? So. Sometimes, you know, we would have to cancel a show because I had done myself damage. Sometimes I would go, well, I do the show, but I'm going to have to sit on a stool because I can't really get up and get around, you know. So that's what those things were. And yes, there were some moments where, you know, Odessa, Texas, I don't really remember falling off the stage there, to be honest. But maybe that was because there was a concussion as well.
Possibly.
I don't know. Like, I do remember, I remember Syracuse and having to play on the stool. You know, there were a couple of shows on that tour where I wasn't very mobile. There was one time we were playing, it was Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto. I was going up a set of metal stairs. We had a set and there were like metal steps that went up to get onto the monitors of the drum riser. The monitors on each side stage. You could even get back up right onto each PA wing. But, I was going up the things and I stubbed a toe and, you know, went down and my shin hit the edge of the metal and I was bleeding and I was wearing white pants and a white socks. And so I could see the blood coming through my, I'm going, oh, that doesn't look too good. I think I'm bleeding, you know, whatever. I mean, shit happens, right? What can you do?
I've got one here from Alex Murphy who says, you're a true rock god, Rick. I've heard you weren't a fan of the theatrical musical video. You preferred just playing the song type shoots. Why is that? Did you have a bad experience with one, or is it just not your cup of tea to be acting things out?
I just never liked the advent of MTV in the States. The idea of imagery being associated with songs. I much preferred a world where a song got played and everybody got to have their own little dream theater. You know, everybody got to have their own little theater of the mind. Like, that's what I liked about music, that it was very liberal in terms of every person getting to have their own take. And so when something came along where it was like, no, we're going to marry this imagery to the song and now you're going to watch this a half a dozen times and now that's the only thing you're going to see in your head, you know, when you hear the song. And I was going, no, I want everybody to have their own, you know, their own imagination going. That's what music should do, you know. So that was why initially I never liked it. And then I liked performance ones because it was like, well, okay, you know, that's a traditional, conventional way for people to get music is to watch a live performance. You're still going to get a little bit of the theater in your head, but now you're marrying it to this, you know, hey, look at me kind of musician thing, you know. But I mean, you know, that always existed too. Although I should say, you know, I played violin in high school in the orchestra. And there was a whole thing about classical music training. And I got a little of this too from classical guitar players from time to time, where they would go, this isn't about you, you know, you're not supposed to make a big deal about yourself. The music is what you're doing. So don't, no large gestures, no, like classical guys, they'd say, don't tap your foot. I go, don't tap your foot. Like I'd be playing, you know, violin in the orchestra and I'd be tapping my foot and they goes, don't do that. Don't tap your foot. You're drawing attention to yourself. That you shouldn't do that, you know? And so I think that answers the question in a different kind of a way. Like, you know, I really always wanted it to be more about the music. I didn't want it to be about me, but you know, I think show business is also this thing about, hello, look at me, you know, like, and there's no way around that. You know, once you're in the rock and roll circus, that's the way it's going to be. But I never wanted to be in movies, you know. I never wanted to be an actor. I was happy being a musician.
There you go, the brilliant Rick Emmett there. Check out Diamonds, the new compilation from Rick from his early 90s albums, records that deserved much more attention, and they've nicely packaged it up for you with this release, so go and support him. And that's it for this week's episode then. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you check out VRP Rocks Radio. Give it a try. You won't regret it. Some brilliant music from the 60s, 70s and 80s that you won't have heard on radio in a long time. Also, of course, make sure to subscribe to VRP Rocks on your podcast app. I don't always sound like this. Don't worry. You'll get all the future episodes released each Monday with a big name classic rock star. Please leave VRP Rocks a 5-star review on the podcast app that you use. It makes a big difference. It really does. And check out the VRP Rocks YouTube channel and social medias too. But that's it. Until next week's episode. So until then, take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.